Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Well, hello, Slackers. How yous doing? Yous well? Good to see you on the other end of whatever speakers or headphones it is. I hope you're good, and I hope that the last week has treated you very kindly. Welcome to the Slacker Podcast. It is now one of Europe's most popular music podcasts, which is a really fun tag to have, and is probably the beginning of some sort of megalomaniac, like, egotistical drive that I'll be like, it needs to be the biggest music podcast in the world. One step at a time. So yeah, the season is doing really well, and I guess this probably isn't even really a season anymore. When lockdown started, I kind of bought some equipment and realized that I can do these from home. Instead of traveling all around the UK trying to sort of find all these people, and it has made my life significantly easier, which has made me record way more and enjoy the whole process of making podcasts way more as well. So if you have just joined us and this is the first time you've listened to the Slacker Podcast, let me tell you a little bit about it. Each week we have a new musical legend. It can be someone like who's been rolling around for years. It could be someone who is really exciting and new and fresh, and they will come in, they'll bring a demo with them to share. It's normally something from the hopefully that's not heard before, something that is special for the fans and something that gives you an idea of where it was they started from as well. And then roughly an hour of chat after that, sometimes less, sometimes more, just depends on how it goes. Massive hugs and massive kisses to the Slacker community on Patreon, patreon.com/the Slacker Podcast. Yeah, you guys are absolute legends, and you're like helping keep the lights on here at Slacker HQ. There's loads of different ways to get more content. I just throw everything that I possibly can that I have, whether that's like exclusive podcasts or playlists or whatever, I will fire all the bonus material up onto the Patreon. And it's not even just about the bonus material. It's really like, if you listen to this all the time and you enjoy it and get something out of it, I mean, it starts at $2 per month. What's that like in pounds? Like £1.60 or something like that. So yeah, if you feel that you want to give back to it, then please do. And if not, then keep enjoying it for free. Also, there's a Slacker YouTube channel that I've just started at the moment. I'm going to start doing live podcasts, I think, at some point. I'm doing some live videos. I got some like new PC gear, and I'm going to have a lot of fun doing live stuff, I think. So yeah, I'll put a link to the YouTube down below so you can go and check that out as well. This week on the Slacker Podcast, we have an artist that I've been really connected with since the beginning of my sort of career as a DJ. When I started at Radio 1 in 2012, Leanne Lajavas, who's my guest today, was one of the first ever people that I interviewed. And we've been like sort of knowing each other the whole way through this. So like, and it's incredible to see Leanne Havas on her third record releasing her best music. Like, she sounds better now in 2020 than she did at any other point in her career. So that is very exciting to me. This was recorded during the peak of the Black Lives Matter protests. And as you will be able to hear throughout the podcast, it is a theme that weighs very heavy on Leanne, who had been out protesting only mere days before this was recorded. This podcast is a bit more melancholy than usual, but for the right reasons, and it is something that we go into. Also, on a more sonic note, the audio around the 40-minute mark goes a little bit weird for a couple of minutes, but it rectifies itself, and I didn't want to edit it out because it kind of wrecks the flow of the podcast. So you're going to sound like everything goes underwater for a minute or two. And that's it for me. I've been like wanging on too long. I hope you enjoyed this week's Slacker Podcast with Leanne Lajavas. Here it is in 3, 2, 1. Leanne Lajavas, welcome to the Slacker Podcast. Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. I mean, we're recording this early on a Monday morning. Like, the cogs in my brain take probably about 4 days to get themselves up to going at full pace. Like, so I think I'm
very similar.
I'm all right. Are you a morning person? You like a
night? I really try to be, but I feel like my productivity only gets going by like 8 p.m.
So yeah, I feel that. I think that's
takes me a while.
That's like almost like a traditional music thing, isn't it? Like a musician, you're like,
yes, yeah, not to be cliche, but
yeah. My missus gets off first thing in the morning. She's like, she does this big stretch and then she goes, right, let's go and do stuff. Whereas, like, I feel like one of those orcs that are being born in Lord of the Rings that's coming out of this primordial soup and is just like,
I forgot about that part of the film. But yeah. Yes, I'm more like that too. It's really hard to, you know, sometimes it's been hard to get up. But that's good to have that influence around you.
Lockdown has made my sleeping pattern screwed up so bad. Like, I normally go to bed about midnight. I think I'm like averaging about 1 or 2 a.m. now.
Yeah.
You don't really have to get up so early when you don't have to put on pants. There's a real sort of like,
well, exactly,
putting on pants.
Yeah. And you don't have to have a shower. You don't have to wear a bra if you're a lady. Mm. I mean, you don't have to anyway, but going outside is a reason to wear a bra a lot of the time for me.
Same here. The amount of weight that I've put on during lockdown, like, I've got like a little B cup going on. It's great.
Oh dear.
So we're going to bring you on to play like an early track of yours.
Okay.
Sometimes we play like a demo. Sometimes we play an early track. It just depends what we're sent.
And yeah,
we get sent Liar.
Oh, good.
She's a liar. With a heart of stone, fell in love with a phantom, was all her own illusion. Dreamt of a fantasy, I watched her die, now it's killing me. He's a liar, with a heart of coal, he could blind her with beauty. Such a foolish goal, illusion, dressed in a fantasy. I let him lie and it's killing me. What more is there to do but cry? What more is there to do but cry? What more is there to do? What more? To do but cry.
trust me completely would leave them so deeply deluded. 'Cause I've lived this lie. It was my consequence that I saw her die. What more is there to do but cry? What more is there to do but cry? What more is there to do? What more can I do but cry?
Stuff that was like even less heard than that first EP. So yeah, I thought, oh yeah, Liar. So that's the actual first song I ever like collaborated with Matt Hales on. Mm-hmm. And it's the first song I actually ever co-wrote with someone else, and I was really scared about writing a song with a stranger. And it wasn't like that at all. Like working with him was just like a member of my family or something. He still is. It's 10 years later and we still collaborate all the time.
I was gonna say, did you guys write together on the new record as well?
We did, yeah, most of it.
Wow. So if the chemistry works, then why fuck with the formula?
Exactly. That's the thing as well. I always have been very protective of the process of writing a song, because I think it's so unexplainable and it's so phenomenal to like even feel compelled to write a song. It's just weird. And I don't know. I think there's lots of sorcery at play sometimes. But then in the sort of industry, you know, I found that it was suggested to me a lot of the time, like, oh, why don't you write with someone? Why don't you write with this guy or that guy? Or, you know, and it wasn't generally other artists. It was always like a kind of producer type person in the behind the scenes. And I have to kind of go and see them and be expected to make a song in a day. Someone I'd never met before, someone I'd never had any kind of prior friendship with before. And that just sort of became the norm. And I was like, I don't know if I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I've seen artists like even on my like label, like I've had artists that have written with other people, and the majority of the artists probably just write by themselves on my label. But we have had co-writes and stuff, and yeah. I've seen it work really well, where artists that like get almost have that sort of competitive edge where they go in and they want to, it helps them become better because they've got somebody to throw ideas off. And I've seen the opposite end where they're like just really not into the fact of sharing the idea and the privacy of songwriting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different mindset. I think for this album, I couldn't have written with anybody that was a stranger to me. However, like on the second album, I did work with, I had come around to the idea at that point. I was like, oh, okay, so I can just as long as I go in with a real sense of who I am and what I'm capable of, then it's and an open mind, then it's
that can be kind of
then it's okay. But I think just depending on what you're writing about, you know, some stuff is just not meant to be.
There must be like a massive moment of like, because like the emotions are high, because if you're writing about something that's quite private or something that, that means quite a lot to you, and you disagree with the person that you're writing with or they're disagreeing with you, it can be a bit of a pressure cooker environment, can't it?
It's weird. Yeah, I found that the best thing is when you feel comfortable enough with someone and when you trust them enough to say that you don't like something.
Yeah,
that's actually a lot harder than, you know, any other aspect of it. It's like, I don't actually like that, can we change it? And so I can do that with the people that I work with. And of course on your own you can be like, I don't like that.
Sometimes there doesn't need to be the reason either. Like, I think the subjectivity of it is enough. Like, something everybody always wants a reason going, like, because I've played in bands before, and like especially in a band of four boys where everybody has a say and not everybody is right. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes the subjectivity of it going, it just doesn't sound that good, or I just don't like it, it's fine. It doesn't have to be a bit like, oh, it's out of time, it's out of key, it's not the right rhythm, it's not the right this, that, or the other. I just don't like it. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool that you're in a band. I didn't know you were
in a band. I was in a band. I was in a band like when I was a kid for about 10 years. Like I hung up my headphones at the tender age of 24. 14 to 24. I got a gig on the radio and I was like, I'm too much of a pussy to be on a tour bus all the time. I think I'll just sit in the house and go and talk about music instead of playing bass.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Have you ever had any sort of situations where you have gone and it really hasn't worked and it's just like, oh God, what is going on? Why has this happened?
Yes, absolutely. Several times. I remember a time in particular, and I don't want to name any names, but
much too classy for that.
Yeah, well, I try. But no, I went in and I had an idea for a song that I was quite, you know, it was early on in my sort of experiences of writing with co-writers who were middle-aged men. And I had this thing that I was, you know, it's quite a sort of tender guitar idea, you know, really serious thing that I was writing. And then this guy just kind of tried to add this whole completely other different section onto the other half of it. Totally different, like, tempo. And essentially tried to erase my idea.
So he's like, I love what you've done here, but I'm just going to change the vocals, rhythm, melody, and percussion.
Yeah. So that is something you have to be aware of as well, is other people trying to use you as their vessel to express themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're not the artist. And it's for me, that day was really dark. I got home and I just cried my eyes out. I was like, this can't be what it's like. I don't want it to be like this. And I was just really sad. Never listened to that thing again and didn't speak to the guy again.
You know when they say, like, the thing is, be the change that you want to see happen?
Hell,
like,
yeah.
Like, when you I think about that, and in terms of, like, this, instead of, like, younger, like, say, like, artists that are coming through that are just starting out or on their first EP now.
Yeah.
And they have the possibility of working with X, Y, and Z who are middle-aged white singer-songwriters, right? And that's because they make up the majority of songwriters. And
I've got to say as well, like, no offense to them. It just is this way that it is. And
that's what I mean.
Like, come into it thinking that that's just the way that it is when it could be different. You don't know that it could be different.
But does that make you want to, like, co-write with people as well to be that point of difference. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
People can come to you instead of go to X, Y, or Z.
Absolutely. I can tell you the amount of times on one hand, first of all, that I've worked with another woman, and then second of all, that I've worked with another black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there must be some, there's something up there.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know, it can totally be different. And I've always wanted also to be a producer to help others kind of just realize their thing rather than telling them what it should be. Just kind of, you know, being another set of ears, someone they can put their trust in, you know.
Yeah.
To say, do you like this? And I actually, do they care what I think? You know, like, I'd love to be that for someone, because that's something I really have found helpful.
I think that's part of the giving back nature that you should have in a creative industry, because it's so difficult to get in and make a career out of music and being a singer or an artist of any description.
Yeah.
When there's somebody else that's coming through, you kind of almost like need to pave a fresher path for them through the industry. And I get a kick out of that, because I do a lot of music industry stuff, like books and things like that.
Yeah.
For young kids that are coming through in a DIY way, because I don't think that there is a lot of there's a lot of conflicting knowledge out there on about 100 different websites about what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And I was like, right, well, I'm gonna put together a book of like the best people in the industry talking about what these things are.
But I love that you've done that.
But yeah, I've
at points tried to Google, you know, what is the right thing to do here in this situation, and there's nothing, because obviously every experience is individual too.
Yeah, I mean, you can boil it pretty much down to like really two points.
Hit me. I've got a pen.
Write the best music you possibly can and have a good lawyer. There you go. Done.
That's it. That's good. I like the second bit. That's clever. Ladies and gentlemen, do have a good lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty important.
And I would also say do it for the right reasons.
Of course, yeah. Like,
not the lawyer, the music.
Yeah.
Like, make sure, I don't know, I feel like if you're doing it, it shouldn't just be to get famous.
Yeah. I think those people
use it as an outlet for your emotions.
So if we sort of go back to the sort of beginning of your sort of musical career, wanted to sort of talk about the sort of mix of Greek heritage and Jamaican heritage, because like those are an unusual like pairing, because I come from Ireland and both my parents come from like 15 miles apart, so I have no interest in like culture clashes in my family, and I always kind of wondered what it would be like having parents from different parts of the world.
Well, it was amazing, but at times confusing as fuck. To add another layer, I was raised by my Jamaican grandparents in South London. So my mum's parents raised me. So that was my grandmother, my grandfather, and my great grandmother. So my granddad's mum.
Wow, you've been spoilt rotten.
Well, that's what everyone says, but my granddad was very good at discipline. And he, like, obviously, I like to think I was the favourite, but, you know, if I messed up, then he'd be there with, you know, his scary self. He's not so scary anymore. He's like, you know, just lovely granddad type now. But yeah, I just, you know, I had this kind of weird situation that I didn't know at the time was, you know, different to my friends and things. And my parents were there, they weren't together, so they kind of lived in different places, and you know, I was very close with both of them, however, so it was I feel like I wasn't missing out on anything, but I knew that it wasn't your traditional two parents, maybe a brother or sister.
A double Christmas. I'm a child of the yeah. world. Well, great. Double presents.
Two crimbos, and yeah. you get to yeah.
days,
and
food,
two different types of food as well. The food, I must say, from these cultures is absolutely incredible.
If you had to pick between like Jamaican and Greek food, like I'd find it very, very difficult because I love both. I can't pick.
My dream was to have like a restaurant that was Greek and Jamaican cuisine, kind fusion. Of fusion. Yes. Yeah.
It's a weird fusion to have because they really don't complement each other, do they?
They might not.
Wacky.
Well, exactly. But you could, I was thinking you could have like, you know, you have spanakopita, you know, the spinach pie.
Aye. Yeah.
With feta cheese. You could do that with callaloo instead of spinach or something like that, so you just fuse it subtly and make it still taste good.
you're like talking too many flavors and spices to somebody who comes from a nation where you're like the national dish is potatoes. Like that's pretty much all we got. Like
well, that there you go. I'm sorry. Yeah, I also grew up just knowing what a breadfruit was, and then
I still do. What is a bread? What is it?
Breadfruit is a really beautiful, starchy kind of accompaniment to your meal, which could be, what does it look like? It's hard to describe. It kind of looks like a football with tiny little hexagons on it, and it's green. And okay. when you can roast it whole, and inside is like white flesh that is similar to, it's kind of a sweeter flavor.
It looks like a lychee.
Yeah, kind of, but like not spiky.
I ate a lychee once and convinced myself I was allergic to it and freaked out and thought my tongue was swelling up.
No, it's just different.
I've just had a massive flashback of how much of an idiot I was. I just looked at it and I was like, I have no idea what that is.
Well, I encourage you to yams. Try it.
I don't have no idea how you would cook a yam. Like I see
yam is still really for me very hard because you've got like, I remember how my grandma was peeling it and there's a certain way that she would peel it and then it's like kind of sticky when you take the skin off, or it's not sticky, it's like slimy or something. Mm. And then you have to like soak it in water or something. I don't know. There's loads of processes to Jamaican cooking.
I used to live in Dalston, and you would see them, like you would go into like the Turkish market or Ridley Road market, and there would just be yams everywhere. And I'd be constantly going past them when I first moved here, like 2012, and I'd be like, what is that weird hairy looking tree thing?
It looks like the roots or the bark of a tree. Yeah.
And I saw an interview with Usain Bolt, who said that like that's why he got so fast, and I got really.
Did you start going yam?
I remember like going up to them and asking them, going like, "How do I cook this? How do I eat this? Like, what is this? Like, am I too old to win the 100-meter sprint?"
That is so cool that he's like promoting yam. I love that.
I mean, like people talk about like celebrity endorsements and stuff like that, but like, if the right person says it at the right time, if the fastest person in the world says this made me the fastest person in the world, then
who are you going to listen to?
A lot of people are going to be like, sweet. And it's like,
exactly.
When I sat down to write questions today, which I haven't looked at probably more than once, I didn't think we'd be talking about Usain Bolt and yams, but like, here we are.
I love that we are. I'm happy that we are. I've been dying to talk about yam. Jamaican cuisine and cooking
too long.
Yeah.
But like, was the Jamaican music and Greek music, was it traditional? Like when in your I suppose it was probably more Jamaican than it was Greek.
It was a mixture. My grandparents were quite religious, so they would listen to kind of religious reggae. So basically, I don't know, like songs of praise, but with lovely Jamaican style reggae beats with it. Very old sounding tapes we had. And then my mum would come in with her Michael Jackson and her No. we loved all of that too. My family.
Pop music is devil music if you're only listening to religious stuff.
I mean, luckily it was a mixture, but my family kind of liked whatever was on TV.
That's not too bad. That's not too bad. Like my granny used to say that Neighbours was immoral. So if I was watching it, like you could imagine.
Why Neighbours?
I come from a big.
What's wrong with Neighbours?
My granny was closer to God than most priests are. Like she was just
Catholic.
Like you know what I'm saying. But like that's like reggae music is cool. Like it's not like it's beat out. Like do you know what I mean? There's so much. There's so much great reggae music. Like I bet you like reconnecting with that must have been fun when you were a bit older.
Yeah, I went to Jamaica when I was 24. With my mother, and I guess I didn't really think about how significant it was when I was doing it. It was only after we got back that I felt kind of changed in a way. I felt more evolved. I felt like I understood myself better. I kind of found I found some peace in how I wanted to express myself and my choices and just, I don't know, it was really, really, really beautiful going there. I actually have a postcard that my mum wrote me to thank me for going with her to Jamaica. Oh,
that's lovely.
Because I was like looking out for her as well because I'm very protective of my mum. And like I could see like guys trying to hit on her. It's like, excuse me, who are you? What's your name? Excuse me, goodbye. My mom said, thank you for being my bodyguard.
That's incredible. That's amazing. I love how you stuffed your mom getting hit on.
Well, you know, not that she doesn't deserve to have some fun, but just not with, you know, just weird guys.
I used to be that protective over my sister, and I especially when we were about 19 or 20.
Mm.
She was probably about 16 or 17, and it was the first time we were ever in the same nightclub together at the same time.
Yeah,
out in the smoking area, and I was sitting chatting to her, and some guy just came up behind her, like you know, trying to like chat her up, and she turned around with a cigarette in her hand. Right, she was only 16 or 17, she was smoking in the first place, and she just turns around with a glass of rosy wine and just turns around to the guy and is like, what is your angle, pervert? Fuck off. And that was the moment I never worried about her ever again. I just watched
that. Is amazing.
What is your angle, pervert?
Wow.
I do not need to worry about this one ever again.
That is brilliant. There you go. Wow. It's just in some people.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So bringing it back to the music, like it was singing before guitar. Guitar came a lot later, didn't it?
Yeah. So it was piano before singing, then guitar like a decade later.
Yeah, because like you're so good at guitar. Like it blew my mind that I didn't even know this, that like you only started playing it at 18.
I did. Yeah, I wanted to play it before that, but if I'm honest, it didn't seem like it was being, I don't know, I just didn't see any women playing guitar when I was growing up, like 7 or 8 years old. I just didn't see anyone on telly playing guitar, and I just wasn't, it just seemed like it was just for boys. In my 8-year-old brain, I was like, oh, guitar, that's for boys. I'll play piano then. And then, of course, you know, now I've grown up and I think, God, there needs to be way more girls playing guitar. That would be good. And I love it now. Because I saw some girls playing guitar, I was like, I want to do that. But it wasn't until I was 18 that I saw those girls. And I kind of went from there.
I think this is a good point for women playing guitars, because like in alternative rock, like the sort of new music, like that's coming through, especially indie music, women are absolutely slaying the lads at the minute. In terms of cool points and in terms of just writing good music. So I think there's going to be a whole new generation coming up. I reckon my thesis is like, give it about 5-6 years, and there'll be real mainstream amazing all female guitar bands, because like the
generations coming
through now are like the ones that are sort of the flag bearers almost, and like the ones coming through will be the ones that benefit from it, because do you know what I mean? Every generation, I say this, I'm even thinking about it now, and like every generation it gets a little bit easier, but then I mean you look at the Black Lives Matter movement at the minute and it seems like it's got worse.
Or it's just, it's like, it's visible. It's now, it's, everything is like, you can explain a lot of things now that you maybe were ignorant to, myself included, like stuff I didn't think was anything to do with my race, because that's what you just, that's what's around you, is what you constantly surrounded by.
Mm.
And then yesterday, it kind of all flared up again. I had a long conversation with a friend, and it just was like, oh man, like some really weird shit has happened in my career that at the time just kind of, you know, was weird, and then I would move on from it, and then I realized, oh, it's because of this. So
what do you mean? Do you think that the color of your skin has held you back, like in the music industry? Or
I don't know if it's held me back necessarily. I think I'm really proud of what I've been able to do, regardless, but just noticing that, you know, just the lack of Black people at the label, you know, people working in these places. And then also, if you are Black in the label, then you're put onto like the grime project or the R&B, you know, and someone who doesn't play guitar who's Black. It just, I don't know if I feel like if there's enough representation for someone like me who does play an instrument, and I'm not the only one, there's others. And I feel like maybe, you know, during all of this, people can shed light on other aspects of just kind of, you know, racism inside of things that means that most things are run by white people, and it could be so much more diverse in so many areas.
I think it's really, it's a matter of representation, isn't it? Like, you can't change anything without having people of like all sorts of backgrounds in those positions of power. With everything that's been going on the last week, I've definitely been asking myself some questions, because I've been talking to a couple of friends of mine as well, and like going like, do I shut up and do I say nothing? Like, because like obviously it has nothing to do with like me and my color of skin, but then the question I'm asking my friend is like, surely is this the point where I should be speaking up as well, or should I be saying nothing? I don't really know, because obviously I feel strongly about it.
I think if you feel strongly about it, then you should speak up.
Yeah, it's still, well, I just
like, if you feel strongly
middle class Irish white of, like,
yeah, but that's that also, you can use that, you can use your privilege to say it to other middle class white guys, you know. It's like, if you feel strongly, you can say something, and it won't be taken the wrong way, I don't think.
Yeah,
if I you're think in support of it, because it's quite obvious in a lot of areas where things need to improve.
Sure.
Or at least I think it is, but there are people that don't see how glaringly obvious these things are that need to change. So yeah, I think if anyone who, you know, who's intelligent and who can speak up, you know, for the people that don't quite understand, then definitely.
Definitely. And out of this, like, a lot of, there's going to be a lot of change, but there's going to be a lot of incredible protest music as well, I think.
I think so. I honestly
there can't not be.
Yeah. Like, I've never wanted to protest something in my life. And I went to the protest this weekend and I was just crying. I was thinking, what can I do? And I've also been just like responding this week personally, you know, with art. I just found it made me want to draw, made me want to say something, made me pick up my guitar for the first time in ages to actually make a new thing. And I was just thinking, yeah, there's so much to be said about it. And it goes into so many different little areas as well. It's like, obviously, the big umbrella of racism, if you want to call it that. So it just, yeah. And it's something as well that I realized, like I was saying earlier, a lot of stuff, microaggressions and things that you experience because you've grown up in a predominantly white country and city, you just sort of don't acknowledge them as anything, and you're just kind of like, oh yeah, well, you know, if you're getting followed around a shop, for example, like,
yeah.
I always was followed around shops, like, you know, the corner shop or Superdrug or whatever, and I was thinking, oh yeah, it's okay, you know, it's probably because I'm a rowdy teenager that they're following me. But then, is it always because,
yeah,
like, that's just one example. There's so many other things that I've realized now. I was like, oh damn, that was probably not as innocent as I thought it was, because I was making excuses for something that's made me think the way that I think.
God, that's like a whole paradigm shift of your life, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you going back,
dude, I've been going back so many lessons.
You must be tired.
Crazy.
You must be very tired. Like, the cause.
I am tired. I actually am tired. Yes, I see everyone's Instagram posts saying they're tired. I'm like, yo, me too, bro. Like, I'm actually tired. I woke up a little sad today. I have been for about 2 weeks, but like, today particularly was just, I don't know, it's just heavy. It's really heavy. I'm trying like not to look at Instagram too much and Twitter, and just because obviously people are sharing the realities of what's going on, but it is so traumatizing to watch, and you don't realize how it sticks with you, and then you end up dreaming something really weird, and then it has the thing that you've seen in your dream, and I don't know, it just really infiltrates.
Yeah, it's like osmosis. It's just like, it just seeps in everywhere.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to, like I say, like, I've been drawing, and it is like a way, if you're in pain, for me, like, I don't know, just to get it through your hand onto the
get it out almost.
Yeah, it's just like cathartic. As is writing music.
How does it feel like writing, releasing like an album in the midst of pandemics and protests? Like, it must be, especially because like it took, you know, like the last album was 2015. So like you must be really excited about this record coming out, which is fucking amazing, by the way, so far. I've heard three tracks and I love it. And I've been playing Paper Thin and Bittersweet quite a lot on my show.
Thank you.
But like, when there's been that 5 years between records, you must be so excited to get this out. And then when this all drops on, you know, when 2020 falls into the burning bin, it must be a little bit like difficult, or does it mobilize you more?
Well, I, at the beginning of the year, you know, there was different plans, and I was, you know, getting ready to release it, and we had certain dates, and then the virus, you know, it all escalated, news of everything, so we just paused it for a second, basically. And then, yeah, it sort of became like, well, you know, people are still gonna release some music, so maybe it makes sense to kind of still do it this summer. And I did feel actually a bit weird about it, because it's hard when it's, you know, it's my job, isn't it? My actual occupation. So I felt a little strange, just because, you know, it felt like I'm not important in this. So why would I be like, oh, listen to my single, you know, my album's coming out. But then I don't know. Then I thought, well, if it's just out, then it's out. And that's that's something I was always going to do. So then I kind of came around to the idea a bit more. And yeah, started to actually feel quite positive about it and quite excited, and you know, and then all this other stuff's happened now with protests. I'm still a bit, I don't know, sort of a bit weird about it. But however, I think there is a, you know, there's a kind of place also to have a bit of light amidst the dark goings on, and it maybe it's, you know, I've been really listening to a lot of music in this time, so maybe it's okay again. I don't know, it's very confusing, and I want to know how other artists feel about releasing stuff right now as well, because I mean, obviously we didn't know that George Floyd was going to be murdered in this way, broad daylight on camera, so it's really hard to
I've seen two approaches to it. I think, well, you're in the middle of like an album campaign, and you've got like tracks out and all the rest of it. And I think your music brings so much joy to a lot of people that like that escapism is really important. If I was setting out my first single from a new album, or if I was setting out my first single from an EP and it was meant to come out last week or this week or whatever, not a mission. I mean, I looked after a band. I still look after a band who had a contentious song called Bomb Scare.
But the
song is written by 19-year-old boys from Northern Ireland, and it's not actually about that. It's about young black people getting shot in America in 2015. So it's like a double message really in there, like, and we released it around the same time. I think a bomb had gone off somewhere, and it was just like, oh god, what have we done? Like, we need to take this down straight away. I think you can be sensitive to things to a certain point, but at the same time, if your music's bringing the people who are protesting, the people who are suffering through pandemic, a little bit of space, as I know it does, because like people react to it when I play it on the radio, then that's a good thing, I think.
I hope that it's bringing some joy, because I just want to feel like what I do is of some use, and that's tough when I don't really make protest songs either, but I understand that even just being me, just being visible, is like saying something, you know. So I feel there's a kind of sense of having a reason as well, because I want to show other young black girls that this is possible, and maybe that helps in some way like that. So hopefully some meaningful change can come with this. Just having conversations like this with you could be something wonderful.
Well, I've noticed around this is like, if your heart's in the right place and you're trying to get the right message across, people will be okay. Like,
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, social media is a tool that I think should just be used for spreading positivity and important information. I hate that there's a reward system for it. I hate that there's likes and that you can like someone's comment. I don't know, knowing the number of views something has had really messes with your head. And I think the point of it is rather to spread positivity, and instead it ends up being a very toxic place. So yeah, that's why I choose not to dip in there all the time.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. There was something. Well, last time we did an interview was we've done a couple of interviews on Radio 1. I think the first interview one of the very first ones I ever did was probably one of the first ones you did on Radio 1 as well, back in 2012. Yeah. I think it was like the week that I started, I think I did an interview with you.
Wow, yeah.
Which is going way back.
You don't look a day over 2012,
though. Yeah, no, there you go. There we go. Sweet. I thought that's the only reason I came on this was just to get that sort of pandering. We haven't done an interview since, and no, we have. We've done like one or two interviews since, but I never got to ask you what it was like. And I'm sure you've been asked this a million times before, but I'm not going to.
Is it about Prince?
Yeah, but I'm not going to not ask about it because it's.
No, you have to. I understand.
But like he passed away in 2016, and a couple of years before that, he was in your living room. Like, you know, he's a big fan of your music. He covered one of your songs. Yeah. And I just like.
You make me cry.
I just wonder what it's like to have that support, because like he really is the ultimate supporter of incredible artists. Like if he gets behind you, like he will, and he also like just finds artists out of nowhere as well. Like, you know, like he's like the ultimate like tastemaker really when it comes to
creating. I agree with you. Like I remember meeting him, and like one of our activities that we did was to watch. He loved watching comedy and like documentaries and live performances. Yeah. And I remember one of our first interactions was watching Esperanza Spalding's performance at Austin City Limits Festival. And he just had it because he had recorded it off telly or whatever, and he had it lined up to show us. I was with my band. And we were all at Paisley Park. We were all very, you know, acknowledging how surreal the moment was in the first place. And then he shows us Esperanza Spalding. I was already a fan. And then just knowing that that's what he did. He spent his time absorbing loads of, you know, talent and finding people, just like how he found me just out of the blue. I don't know, he's just,
did he ever tell you that? Called like, was it like a website, like was it like a performance on YouTube, or like
he found me, I think, because a friend of a friend of his had played him my EP, my first EP, and then I did a performance at the Scala. And it was live streamed, or something was live streamed. I can't remember what it was, but he watched the live stream. So he was like, I just watched your show and I'd like to talk about it. And then I was like, okay. Sure. So then he called me and we just talked about music. We talked about songs, and he asked me if I liked Joni Mitchell. I was like, of course, I love Joni Mitchell. And he was saying, how he, you know, liked my song Age, and then he wondered if it had been written about him. And, just, I don't know, just the most incredible, surreal conversation that was then cut short because my phone battery died. I could hear the thing beeping, and then I said, oh, I think my battery's going to die. He's like, it's okay, we'll talk again. And I was like, okay, cool. And then we did, you know, we stayed in touch, we maintained, and it became a genuine friendship to the point where I could just call him up and say, how are you? Or send him a new song and, you know, not even ask him what he thought of it. I'd just send him stuff, you know, so he knew how I was doing. And then he'd give feedback. And if I'm, yeah, I don't know, I miss him.
Yeah, of course. Like,
I miss him. I miss, like, just, you know, knowing that he's there. And it didn't hit me for a really long time that, you know, that he had actually passed away and that he was actually not coming back forever. And I just, I don't know, it was really, just really tough to deal with. I hadn't spoke to him, you know, for a few weeks before he died. So I was just, all those things come through your head. You're like, oh, I just wish I could have said something like, how are you? Or sent him another email or, I don't know, just something, stayed in touch better. But that's, I think when people pass away, that's something that always goes through your head.
Yeah.
You have done better.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the sort of common yeah. feeling is like, when was the last time you spoke? And what I gathered from that was like, he's just tunnel vision music, isn't it? Like, it's just like,
yeah.
it's not even, it's beyond a passion. It's like, it's an extension really of
yeah.
who he is. Cause I mean, his output was always incredible.
Yeah.
And
I would encourage you to watch his most recent appearance on Arsenio Hall. He had an interview and he did a performance on that show and he asked like a bunch of us to come be in the audience. So it was like me and then like all of his friends, his music friends, and just, you know, lots of other amazing black female instrument playing, you know, just his kind of people that he really cared about and encouraged. So we were all watching him do this fantastic interview, and in the interview, I think you should watch the whole thing.
But yeah, I definitely will.
He said, I think Arsenio said something like, you know, what was your first job or something like that? Like, what did you do? And he was like, I looked in the phone book and I looked at all these list of jobs and I thought, I don't want to do any of that. None of that's me. And then he said, so I spent he spent every waking moment working as hard as he possibly could to do music. And that's what you've just said. That's what you see when you think of him. It's just his unapologetic point of view, musically and with himself, using himself as like a canvas for his expression and just getting his point across. Like, this is who he is. And that's the message, I think, that he's sort of passed on to the rest of us, is just to be the best you can possibly be.
It's a testament to him, like, because like how hard he worked, and like hard work and talent will get you to wherever you want to be, because it's not like he had anything handed to him. Like, I mean, he did.
Like, that's what I'm saying too. Like,
he wasn't of the like ilk of pop star that was like actively
necessarily privileged or. Yeah. Had like loads of opportunities given to him, you know.
I watched a show it was done by the guy who made King of the Hill, and it was an animated thing about old funk bands, and it was like stories behind the scenes, and there was stories about how when Prince came and would support Rick James on tour. And like Rick James would get really paranoid and freaked out that like Prince was better at him. So like he would continuously over the years try and get a bigger set than Prince would have.
And
it was just like, it was ridiculous. But I don't think Prince cared. Prince didn't care. He was just going about his business.
Exactly. That's the thing. You just got to just do you. And it's so hard as well. And this whole industry is so... like competitive, and like I said, with Instagram, things like that, just everything trying to make you feel bad about yourself or It's trying to make you feel like you're not as good. And it's just like, put that all away. What do you really want to do? What do you really like? And just follow that and keep doing that. And that's the most happy you can be, I think, is when you're truly, you know, when you've pushed away all of the sludge to find that thing that truly makes you feel like yourself and feel happy.
You sound like that on your new album. Like I'd written down the word, like, and it's a word I don't use because it's such a cheesy hippie word, but it feels like, I wrote down, it was like, it feels like it was a freeing experience to write that record. And I stick by it. Like, I mean, all the songs in it bring me joy, and they hit hard. And you know, like, they bring cathartic joy when they need to bring cathartic joy. The melodies and the guitar playing, like, make me feel like happy, because, you know, it's like that balance of like happy sad.
But catharsis.
Yeah, and it sounds like a. It sounds like a record that's you, if you know what I mean.
Thank you so much. That's the biggest compliment. If anybody has said that to me about this record, that's the best possible thing. Because that's why I called it Leanne LaHavis as well. Got tired of feeling like I could have done better with the last album, you know, feeling like I could have, if I'd just had my opinion go across just a little bit more, or if I had just put my foot down a bit about this other thing that didn't happen, you know, I would have felt even prouder of it. I'm very proud of all my albums, don't get me wrong. But yeah. Like, the last one particularly was really, in so many ways, amazing to make, but so not me to make. Yeah. Like, I just wanted to do my own A&R, for example. I wanted to just pick the ones that I wanted to do. And I remember having, you know, heated discussions, let's say, with people at the label, you know, about which songs were going on it. And I was like, well, why don't you trust me? Why don't you just trust me to be able to write a good enough song and know what I want to say on my album, you know? But I also back then didn't really know those things as well. I was a bit younger, I was learning. And like I said, I had just been to Jamaica, realized how deeply important it was to do that with my mother, and loads of shit was going on. So when I got around to this album, I was like, it's got to be called Leanne LaHavis, and it's got to have all my own decisions on it. Yes. Because now I can stand by it, and if anyone says something like, oh, I don't really like that song, or blah 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 about this, I'm like, cool, I don't care, because I like it, I did it all myself.
Yeah,
you can have it, you're welcome to your opinion. But you know, when you've got that one piece of doubt about something, that, and then somebody, just one person, says that thing, and you're like, oh, I knew it. I wanted to avoid moments like that on this.
Yeah. Well, it's I haven't heard the whole thing, because
I want you to hear the whole thing. I
haven't got the record yet, but it comes out. When does it come out? I don't know.
17th of July.
Boom. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear the whole thing. I'm sure I'll badger like whoever it is at your record label for a sneaky copy.
Before. I just received the finished vinyl.
Did you do an unboxing?
I did, actually, because all of my band are on the album, so I did a little video for them, and then I thought maybe I'll pop that on the socials.
That's nice.
You can all see the packaging, and I got this sticker as well that comes on the shrink wrap. Even that was designed or co-designed by myself. So yeah, it just feels like a really significant thing. To me, this almost feels like my actual first album.
Yeah, it's like the first album of a new chapter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my first album doing it because I wanted to do it, and I did do it. And every intention I had, which was to have a live band on it, to produce it myself, to choose all the songs myself and make sure that everything was a story, to have 10 tracks to just everything feels right for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that's something that I think, I don't know, I feel like I wish I knew that earlier, like that it could be like this.
Yeah.
And now I feel really proud.
I think that story of doing it yourself and doing it yourself through a major label as well.
That was cool.
Yeah, that is cool. That is very cool. Because that doesn't happen very often. I think it's,
yeah.
But you've shown, like, you know, I'm like over the those two albums that you can't be trusted. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Within a major.
Thank you.
And they're like going, all right, fair enough.
Yeah.
That's great. Like, I mean, you can tell from what I've heard of it anyway. I can't wait for it to come out and everybody else to hear it too.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and
for having me.
Yeah, that's us, done and dusted.
Yeah, lovely. I'm a bit emosh.
Yeah, maybe recording them on a Monday morning gets them a little bit more sort of.
Yeah, true. But there's like a lot going on, and you've tapped into a lot of memories and things that, you know, were super important to me, basically, that maybe I didn't realize how important they were.
Yeah, so sorry. I might have put you.
No, it's good.
I put you onto an existential trip for the rest of the day. I mean, like, I wrote down like all these questions this morning. Normally, I'll do them a couple of days in advance because I'm normally decently prepared. Yeah. But like, I didn't even touch on half of them. I was just like, I can't keep you here for another 4 hours. Like,
no, it's okay. Like, if we want to chat another time, then
all right. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Phil. Really good to see you.